Come on, tell me this is not one of the most entertaining entertainers of all time.
Without a doubt. No question about it.
All right, there's a new book out. It's called Before You Judge Me, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days. And on the line with us right now is a guy I've seen on TV numerous times on the Tavis Smiley Show. His name is, oddly enough, Tavis Smiley. Hi, Tavis.
Hey, Wendy. How are you? Hey, Bill. How are you?
Nice to meet you finally, Tavis. We're both big fans.
Thank you.
First of all, our condolences to a couple of people you were close personal friends with, Prince.
Yeah.
And Muhammad Ali. So sorry about that.
Thank you.
You were also pretty tight with Maya Angelou. What's wrong with these friends that you're having? This is worrisome to me, Tavis.
You know, I grew up down the road from Chicago. Chicago, as I've said many times, is my favorite American city, and I'm not saying that because I'm a WGN. I've said it a thousand times because I grew up down the road in Indiana, and I could never have imagined as a child growing up in Indiana that I'd have this great fortune. There's a great line in a movie called Broadcast News that stars that wonderful actor William Hurt, and his character asks in the film, what do you do when your life exceeds your dreams? And I have been fortunate in so many ways that my life has exceeded my dreams, and what an honor it is to have met some of these people and be able to call some of them friends.
That's awesome. Now, have you ever met Michael Jackson? Have you interviewed him?
I met Michael a couple times, never interviewed him. I've said many times it'd be cosmically unfair, I guess, to have been friends with both Prince and Michael. Nobody could have it that good, but at least I spent 20 years with Prince. Met Michael a few times, but grew up, again, in his home state of Indiana as a Michael Jackson fan. His music is the soundtrack of my life, and when he died, I was gobsmacked because I had my tickets, plane tickets, concert tickets, hotel reservations to go to London. I wanted to see this last show if, in fact, Wendy and Bill, this was going to be it. As they said, this is it.
And that that went out on DVD because I know we purchased it. I was a huge fan of Michael Jackson's, and June 25th, 2009 is when we lost him. And I'm still I'm still pinching myself sometimes because I forget that he's gone.
Yeah, it's hard to accept. It's been 7 years as of last Saturday, I think, 7 years since he's been gone from us. And I think sometimes we get so caught up in certain individuals' iconography. When these icons get to that level, we get so caught up in their iconography that we lose sight of their humanity. And to be sure, because Michael was human, he made any number of mistakes. There were any number of self-inflicted wounds, and people are entitled to their opinions about him as an iconic star. But there is no doubt about his artistic genius, and I hope that this book, which focuses just on the last 16 weeks of his life, from the moment he makes the announcement, I'm coming back one more time, this is it, he's dead 16 weeks later at the age of 50, and I wanted to know as a fan, what happened? When you're trying so hard to get back on that stage, what happened inside of that 16-week period that put you on the brink of and ultimately caused you to take your last breath and you didn't get back to doing what you were so desperately trying to do? That human drama, that story fascinated me. I started out very quickly with one simple question. Why are you gone so soon? When I got into the research, my question, Bill, did a 180 on me. It wasn't why are you gone so soon, but when I saw all the madness going on in his world, my question became, how did you live this long?
He had I was saying before we got you on, I'm one of the few people in this world who does not believe he had any sexual interaction with these kids. He was a child star. His father was a tyrant. I feel that Michael Jackson never had the opportunity to grow up, and this whole cuddling thing was just he didn't get that growing up and wanted to give it to someone else. Those are my feelings and my feelings alone.
And you're entitled to that, and I think a lot of people feel the same way. The reason why we called this book Before You Judge Me, as you know, he had a song called Childhood, not one of his biggest hits, but a song he wrote called Childhood. There's a line in the song that says, before you judge me, try hard to love me. Before you judge me, try hard to love me. It seems to me that's a mantra we should all live our lives by, trying to love folk before we judge them. And so Michael did not, in fact, have a childhood, and there's a eerie scene in this book in the last 16 weeks where Conrad Murray, the doctor, of course, who was tried and convicted for wrongful death, Conrad Murray, for some reason, recorded this conversation, but Michael is under the propofol, but he's coming out from under it, so he's only half conscious, but he's talking about two things on this tape that was played at the trial. One, how he regrets what happened to him as a child. He's still, at 50 years of age, wrestling with having lost a childhood, the abuse of that childhood. He's only half cognizant of what he's saying, but it's so deep in his spirit and in his DNA, it comes out in that call. And the second thing he's talking about is how he has to get back on stage. So even when this guy isn't lucid, the drama of what happened to him as a child is still so deep in him that it comes out of his mouth when he doesn't even know what he's saying.
Tavis, was Michael Jackson only happy when he was on stage?
I wouldn't say he was only happy. Then he was certainly happy all the time around his children. And what I think most people don't know is that the main reason for wanting to do these shows one last time at the age of 50 is because his kids had never seen him perform live. It wasn't just because he needed money. It wasn't just because of the greed that the promoters had to do more and more and more shows. All that factors in. But his primary reason was that before he got too old, he wanted his kids to see him do live what they had never seen him do. And so that's why he was fighting so hard to battle this tension between his drug dependency on the one hand and this dogged desire to get back on stage for his kids and his fans one last time.
And you hear of drug dependency, and not unlike Prince, when we heard, being local here, he was coming home, the plane had to make a diversion to Moline.
Yeah.
We're thinking, something's got to be wrong. You just don't land a plane because you have the flu, and that was
right.
What was originally reported. And then when opiates came up, and even with Michael Jackson, you hear drugs, and it's like, oh, poor thing, shame on them for doing drugs. But these were prescribed drugs.
They were prescribed drugs. They were never recreational users. They both lived clean lives with regard to how they took care of their specimens, their vessels, their bodies. And it's just so ironic. Both born the same year, both dead in their 50s, both drug dependency, not recreational use, born initially of pain. And they were trying to anesthetize the pain so they could continue doing what they did best, which is to love and serve people. And so there's so many parallels here. I spent one night with Prince, and we spent many nights together hanging around and talking around the world. But he was in the studio when word came that Michael had passed. He canceled rehearsal, sent his band home. He was practicing to go to headline the Montreux Jazz Festival. When he sent his band home after hearing Michael had died, he locked himself in his bedroom for days, Wendy. He wouldn't come out. When he finally came out, he called me and invited me to go to Montreux with him. I went to Montreux. He slayed the show that night, and from 2 o'clock in the morning until the sun came up, I sat and listened to Prince talk about his love and his respect for Michael's artistic genius. What a moment to spend hours listening to Prince talk about his respect for Michael's talent, and now they're both, again, sadly, gone too soon.
Way too soon, way too soon. Tavis Smiley is our guest, along with David Ritz. They have written a book called Before You Judge Me, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days. Tavis, since you brought up Michael Jackson's kids, here's a question that's been floated out there for years and years and years. Are they truly his children?
You know, I don't know. There's so many things that I don't know. I don't know what the story is on that. I know that these kids love Michael. I know that they're in a lot of pain. I know that his daughter, Paris, particularly, is on the top of my prayer list, Bill. When you see the way her pain is playing out in these social media spaces and the way that she's trying to express herself and defend herself and being trolled on Twitter, social media is no place for these kids, and I wish I could just get to her. To say, get off of social media and get her the help that she needs. Her mother, her grandmother, Miss Catherine, is doing the best she can. But you got to feel for this girl. It's not easy for any child to go through adolescence. But I just get pain when I see what she's going through in this social media space.
She just turned 18. I saw a picture on Instagram where she was sporting her new tattoos. And in Paris Jackson's feelings, she had a terrible time. And now these tattoos and works of art on her represent courage and the ability to go on and don't give up, everyone. And I thought, I read that and I thought, that's great. I looked at the picture, but really she's 18 years old and this is giving her a spotlight that I wish she didn't have either.
I totally agree, Wendy. Couldn't agree more.
Why do you think, without a doubt, Tavis, we've heard the story so many times from child actors and child musicians and child stars, how difficult it is to transition to a normal life. But I think Michael Jackson was unparalleled in how isolated he was. Why did he have a harder time than anybody else at this?
Because your question is a brilliant question, Bill, because he was more gifted than anybody else, because more people pulled at him than anybody else, because more people got their claws into him than anybody else. Barry Gordy told me in one of our conversations, we've talked about Michael so many times over the years, and Barry's a friend, and Quincy's a friend, we've talked about this, and they both agree that at one point in Michael's life, as an adult, he became rudderless. And when you become rudderless, that's Barry Gordy's word, rudderless. When you become rudderless and you're not anchored, you become unmoored, you start to drift. But that's a lot to deal with when you've got all the pressure that Michael was under from being a child. I can tell you this, the research for this book and really understanding how Michael just suffered all those years because of his childhood or lack thereof or the abuse in that childhood. For the first time in my life, Bill and Wendy, I'm really starting to rethink personally what I think of the way we treat child stars and whether or not, if you are gifted at a young age, whether or not you ought to spend your time just studying and learning and practicing. And when you get to an age where you're old enough to handle it, then you get a chance to exercise your gift. I just think I'm just really starting to rethink this whole notion of what I think of child stars.
Well, and he was such a young baby when he started performing with the Jackson Five. And, I mean, what is the age limit? Is it 18?
Exactly.
I mean,
it's a tough question. I don't have the answer. I just know that when I look at the way he was scarred, and at 50 years of age, he's still wrestling with these very, very serious questions. It's just got me rethinking the process of the kinds of young people that I'm excited about and excited for, but whether or not we're putting too much on them, and whether or not, in fact, whatever you think of Michael Jackson, there's a legitimate question to be asked, Wendy and Bill, which is, what role did we play? What role did we, the public, what role did we, his fans, play in helping to create whoever he became?
That's a good question. Can't wait to read this book. We just got it in. Before You Judge Me, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days. This covers what the 16 weeks prior to his death and what transpired. What about LaToya and Janet? Did they have any part in this? Did Michael mention them? Or were they still talking?
Yeah, he in the last 16 weeks didn't see his family a lot because he was rehearsing so aggressively for the tour. Did talk to his mother, of course, regularly. That's the love of his life. And his father was, as always, pressuring him. His dad wanted him to cancel these concerts in London and instead do a reunion tour with his brothers, which he thought, one, would make more money for Michael. Number two, wouldn't have Michael working so hard. So here, even until the end, his father is still in his face, still pressuring him, still trying to control a certain part of his legacy, and that story over the last 16 weeks is tension-filled, and you'll find that in the book as well.
Tavis, was there jealousy? You know, he was kind of front and center for the Jackson 5. Was that hard on the other brothers, or did they just accept it?
I think it's hard on anyone when you're a family unit and one person breaks out and has the kind of wild success. On the one hand, you have to be happy for him. He is your brother. You love him, and you're happy to see him succeed. On the other hand, when you end up in the shadows, I think part of the human condition is that everybody wants to be loved, respected, appreciated, and acknowledged. That's just part of the human condition. And when you lose out on that acknowledgement piece of it, that's got to work on you in some way. I don't know if it rises to the level of jealousy, but you never convince me that that's not something they think about, certainly.
And, you know, with Joe Jackson, as you said, towards the end, putting the pressure on Michael to get back with the brothers and do a tour, there's something in all of us that we do try to please people, but you always try to please your parents. So imagine what Michael was feeling like, being probably angered at what his dad is thinking, but it's like still wanting to please him. It's a tough position to be in.
And the only reason why he met with his father, his story in the book, his father came to his house two or three times, ringing the doorbell, begging to be let in to talk to Michael. Michael at first didn't want to be bothered with it because he was non-confrontational. He only agreed to see his father finally and let him come in the house to make his pitch because his mother asked him to do so. Michael, again, to the end, trying to please his mother.
Can't wait to read this.
Tavis, one more really quick question. We were talking about Lisa Marie Presley yesterday because she's getting another divorce. She's been married four times. One of those marriages was to Michael Jackson. What was behind that marriage, do you think, exactly?
I don't know. I think Michael certainly had a fascination with the success of Elvis. Michael was fascinated with anyone in the arts community who'd had the kind of wild success that he wanted to emulate. And so I don't know. I can't get inside his head in that regard, and it's not covered in our text. But I think that had something to do with the fact that he and Lisa were hanging out in the first place, was that Michael was so fascinated by the success and the impact that her father had had when he was on the stage.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It does.
And if you really, you know, idolize somebody, what better thing than to marry their daughter?
Right.
Seriously.
Right.
Such a pleasure to talk to you. Keep in touch and keep us posted on all the books, because I'm sure there are more in you. But this one, Before You Judge Me, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days. Tavis Smiley, such a pleasure to talk to you.
Bill and Wendy, thank you both. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you, sir. You
Bye-bye
too.
Now.
That's Tavis Smiley. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.